Chapter 41. At the boundary between Restoration Province and Six Suns, they had no trouble at all getting through search. A border official who looked as though he might have been an accountant or a lawyer in the world that no longer existed simply glanced at the passport Binet had written out, nodded when he saw the florid Binet 25 inscription at the bottom, and waved them on through. 2 days later, when they were crossing from Six Suns Province into Godland, it wasn't that simple. Here, the border patrol looked like a gang of cutthroats who would just as soon toss Theremin and Safera over the side of the elevated highway as look at their papers at all. There was a long, uneasy moment as Theremin stood there, dangling the passport like some sort of magic wand. Then the magic worked, more or less.
"This thing is safe through?" the head cutthroat asked.
"A passport, yes. Exemption from search."
"Who from?"
"Binet 25, Chief Search Administrator, Restoration Province. That's two provinces up the road."
"I know where Restoration Province is. Read it to me."
"To whom it may concern, this is to attest that the bearers of this document, Theremin 762 and Safera 89, are properly accredited emissaries of the Fire Patrol of Saros City, and that they are entitled to..."
"The Fire Patrol? What's that?"
"Altenall's bunch," one of the other cutthroats murmured.
"Ah."
The head man nodded toward the needle guns that Theremin and Safera wore in full view at their hips.
"So, Altenall wants you to go marching off through other people's countries carrying weapons that could set a whole district on fire?"
Safera said, "We're on an urgent mission to the people at Emgondo National Park. It's vital that we get there safely." She touched her green neckerchief. "You know what this means? What we do is to keep fires from starting, not to start them. And if we don't get to Emgondo on time, the Apostles of Flame will come marching down this highway and destroy everything you people are trying to create." It didn't make a lot of sense, Theremin thought. Their getting to Emgondo, far to the south, wasn't going to save the little republics at the northern end of the highway from the Apostles. But Safera had put just the right note of conviction and passion into her speech to make it all sound very significant, in a jumbled sort of way. The response was silent for a moment, while the border patrolman tried to figure out what she was talking about. Then, an irritated frown and a perplexed glare. And then, suddenly, almost impetuously, "All right, go on through. Get the hell out of here, and don't let me see you anywhere inside Six Suns Province again, or we'll make you regret it." "Apostles, Emgondo." "Thank you very much," said Theremin, with a graciousness bordering so closely on sarcasm that Safera took him by the arm and steered him quickly through the checkpoint before he could get them into real trouble. They were able to move quickly in this stretch of the highway, covering a dozen or more miles a day, sometimes even more. The citizens of the provinces that called themselves Six Suns and Godland and Daylight were hard at work, clearing the debris that had littered the Great Southern Highway since nightfall. Barricades of rubble were set up at regular intervals. Nobody was going to be driving the Great Southern Highway again for a long, long time, Theremin thought. But between checkpoints, it was possible now to walk at a steady clip, without having to crawl and creep around mounds of hideous wreckage. And the dead were being taken from the highway and buried, too. Bit by bit, things were beginning to seem almost civilized again. But not normal. Not even remotely normal. There were few fires now to be seen still burning in the hinterlands flanking the highway, but burned-out towns were visible all along the route. Refugee camps had been set up every mile or two, and as they walked briskly along the elevated road, Theremin and Safera could look down and see the sad, bewildered people of the camps, moving slowly and purposelessly about in them, as if they had all aged 50 years in that one single terrible night. The new provinces, Theremin realized, were simply strings of such camps linked together by the straight line of the Great Southern Highway. In each district, local strongmen had emerged who had been able to put together a little realm, a petty kingdom that covered 6 or 8 or 10 miles of the highway, and spread out for perhaps a mile on either side of the roadbed. What lay beyond the eastern and western borders of the new provinces was anybody's guess. No radio or television communication seemed to be in existence. "Wasn't there any kind of emergency planning at all?" Theremin asked, speaking more to the air than to Safera. But it was Safera who answered him. "What Aethor was predicting was altogether too fantastic for the government to take seriously. And it would have been playing into Mondior's hands to admit that anything like the collapse of civilization could happen in just one short period of darkness, especially a period of darkness that could be predicted so specifically." "But the eclipse?" Yes, maybe some people in high office were capable of looking at the diagrams and really did believe that there was going to be an eclipse, and a period of darkness as a result. But how could they anticipate the stars? The stars were simply the fantasy of the apostles of flame, remember? Even if the government knew that something like the stars was going to happen, no one could predict the impact the stars would have.
Sheeran could, Theremin said.
Not even Sheeran. He didn't have an inkling. It was darkness that was Sheeran's specialty, not sudden unthinkable light filling the whole sky.
Still, Theremin said, to look around at all this devastation, all this chaos, you want to think that it was unnecessary, that it could have been avoided somehow.
It wasn't avoided, though.
It better be the next time. Sephira laughed.
Next time is 2049 years away. Let's hope we can leave our descendants some kind of warning that seems more plausible to them than the Book of Revelation seemed to most of us.
Turning, she stared back over her shoulder, peering apprehensively at the long span of highway they had covered in the past few days of hard marching. Theremin said, "Afraid you'll see the apostles thundering down the road behind us?"
"Aren't you? We're still hundreds of miles from Amgondo, even at the pace we've been going lately. What if they catch up with us, Theremin?"
"They won't. A whole army can't possibly move as quickly as two healthy and determined people. Their transport isn't any better than ours. One pair of feet per soldier, period. And there are all sorts of logistic considerations that are bound to slow them down."
"I suppose.
Besides, that message said that the apostles are planning to stop at each new province along the way to establish their authority. It's going to take them plenty of time to obliterate all those stubborn little petty kingdoms. If we don't run into any unexpected complications ourselves, we'll be at Amgondo weeks ahead of them."
"What do you think will happen to Binay and Raista?" Sephira asked, after a time.
"Binay's a pretty clever boy. I suspect he'll work out some way of making himself useful to Mondior."
"And if he can't?"
"Sephira, do we really need to burn up our energies worrying ourselves over horrible possibilities that we can't do a damn thing about?"
"Sorry," she said sharply. "I didn't realize you'd be so touchy."
"Sephira."
"Forget it," she said. "Maybe I'm the touchy one."
"It'll all work out," said Theremin. "Binay and Raista aren't going to be harmed. We'll get down to Amgondo in plenty of time to give the warning. The apostles of flame won't conquer the world.
And all the dead people will rise up and walk again, too." "Oh, Theremin. Theremin."
Her voice broke.
"I know. What will we do?"
"We'll walk fast is what we'll do. And we won't look back. Looking back doesn't do any good at all."
"No. None at all," said Sephira.
And smiled and took his hand. And they walked quickly onward in silence. It was amazing, Theremin thought, how swiftly they were going now that they had hit their stride. The first few days, when they were coming down out of Saro City and picking their way through the wreckage-strewn upper end of the highway, progress had been slow, and their bodies had protested bitterly against the strains that they were imposing on them. But now they were moving like two machines, perfectly attuned to their task. Sephira's legs were nearly as long as his own, and they walked along side by side, muscles working efficiently, hearts pumping steadily, lungs expanding and contracting in flawless rhythm. Stride, stride, stride. Stride, stride, stride. Stride, stride, stride. Hundreds of miles yet to go, sure. But it wouldn't take long, not at this pace. Another month, perhaps. Perhaps even less. The road was almost completely clear down here in the rural regions beyond the farthest edge of the city. There hadn't been nearly as much traffic here in the first place as there had been to the north, and it looked as though many of the drivers had been able to get off the highway safely, even while the stars were shining, since they were in less danger of being struck by the cars of other drivers who had lost control. There were fewer checkpoints, too. The new provinces in these sparsely populated areas covered much greater areas than those up north, and their people seemed less concerned with such things as search. Theremin and Sephira underwent serious interrogation only twice in the next 5 days. At the other border points, they were simply waved on through without even having to show the papers Binay had provided for them. Even the weather was on their side. It was fair and mild almost every day. A few little rain showers now and then, but nothing that caused serious inconvenience. They would walk for 4 hours, pause for a light meal, walk another four, eat again, walk, stop for 6 hours or so of sleep,
taking turns, one sitting up and watching for a few hours, then the other, and then get up and march onward, like machines. The suns came and went in the sky in their age-old rhythm, now Petru and Trey and Dovum up above, now Onos and Sitha and Tano, now Onos and Dovum, now Trey and Petru, now four suns at once. The unending succession, the great pageant of the skies. Theramin had no idea how many days had passed since they had left the sanctuary. The whole idea of dates, calendars, days, weeks, months, it all seemed quaint and archaic and cumbersome to him, something out of a former world. Sephira, after her spell of brooding and apprehensiveness, became cheerful again. This was going to be a breeze. They would make it down to Amgondo with no trouble at all. They were passing through a district known as Spring Glen now, or perhaps it was called Garden Grove. They had heard several different names from the people they encountered along the road. It was farm country, open and rolling, and there was little sign here of the hellish devastation that had blighted the urbanized regions. An occasional fire-damaged barn, or a herd of farm animals that seemed to be roaming unattended, and that was about the worst of it. The air was sweet and fresh. The light of the suns was bright and strong. But for the eerie absence of vehicular traffic on the highway, it was possible here to think that nothing extraordinary had happened at all. "Are we halfway to Amgondo yet?" Sephira asked. "Not quite. I haven't seen a road sign for a while, but my guess is that..." He stopped abruptly. "What is it, Theramin?" "Look. Look there, to the right. Along that secondary road coming in from the west." They peered over the edge of the highway. Down below, a few hundred yards away, a long row of trucks was drawn up at the side of the secondary road, where it fed into an approach to the main one. There was a large, bustling camp there, tents, a big campfire burning, some men chopping logs. 200 or 300 people, perhaps, all of them in black hooded robes. Theramin and Sephira exchanged astounded glances.
"Apostles," she whispered.
"Yes. Get down. Hands and knees. Hide yourself against the railing here."
"But how did they manage to get this far south so fast? The highway's upper end is completely blocked."
Theramin shook his head. "They didn't take the highway at all. Look there. They've got trucks that work. Here's another one coming right now. Gods, that looks strange, doesn't it? An actual moving vehicle. And hearing the sound of an engine again after all this time." He felt himself beginning to shiver. They were able to keep a fleet of trucks undamaged and a supply of fuel. And obviously they've come down from Cerro around through the west on little country roads. Now they're joining up with the main highway, which I suppose is open from here to Amgondo. They could be there by this evening.
"This evening? Theramin, what are we going to do?"
"I'm not sure. There's only one wild chance, I guess. What if we went down there and tried to seize one of those trucks, and drove it to Amgondo ourselves? Even if we got there only 2 hours ahead of the apostles, there'd be time for most of the Amgondo people to escape, right?" Sephira said,
"Perhaps. It sounds crazy, though. How could we steal a truck? The moment they see us, they'll know we aren't apostles, and they'll grab us."
"I know. I know. Let me think." After a moment, he said, "If we could catch a couple of them at a distance from the others and take their robes away from them, shoot them with our needlers if we have to, and then when we're robed, just walk up to one of the trucks as though we have every right to be doing that, and jump on board and drive off toward the highway,
they'd follow after us in 2 minutes.
Maybe. Or maybe if we were calm and cool about it, they'd think it was something perfectly ordinary, part of their plan, and by the time they realized it wasn't, we'd be 50 miles down the road." He looked at her eagerly. "What do you say, Sephira? What other hope do we have? Continue toward Amgondo on foot, when for us it'll be a journey of weeks and weeks, and they can drive past us in a couple of hours?" She was staring at him as though he had lost his mind.
"Overpower a couple of apostles? Hijack one of their trucks? Go zooming off toward Amgondo? Oh, Theramin, it'll never work, you know that."
"All right," he said abruptly. "You stay here. I'll try to do it alone. It's the only hope there is, Sephira." He rose to a half-crouch and began to scuttle along the side of the highway toward the exit ramp a few hundred yards ahead.
"No, wait, Theramin."
He looked back at her and grinned. "Coming?"
"Yes. Oh, this is crazy.
Yes, he said. I know. But what else can we do? She was right, of course. The scheme was crazy. Yet he saw no alternative. Evidently, the report Binet had received had been garbled. The apostles had never intended to move down the Great Southern Highway province by province, but instead had set out directly for M. Gondo in a huge armed convoy, taking minor roads which, though not very direct, were at least still open to vehicular transport. M. Gondo was doomed. The world would fall by default to Mondior's people. Unless... He had never imagined himself as a hero. Heroes were people he wrote about in his column. People who functioned at the top of their form under extreme circumstances, performing strange and miraculous deeds that the ordinary individual would never dream of even attempting, let alone of carrying off. And now, here he was in this strangely transformed world, blithely talking of overpowering hooded cultists with his needle gun, commandeering a military truck, speeding off to M. Gondo Park to sound the warning of the oncoming attack. Crazy. Utterly crazy. But perhaps it might just work, simply because it was so crazy. Nobody would be expecting two people to appear out of thin air down here in this peaceful bucolic setting and simply run off with a truck. They edged their way down the highway ramp, Theremin a short distance in the lead. A thickly overgrown field lay between them and the camp of the apostles. Maybe, he whispered, if we get down and wriggle through the tall grass here, and a couple of the apostles come wandering out this way for some reason, we can rise up and jump them before they know what's happening. He got down. He wriggled. Sephira went right after him, keeping pace. 10 yards. 20. Just keep going, head down, and wriggle over to that little knoll, and then wait. Wait. A voice said suddenly, just behind him, "What do we have here? A couple of peculiar serpents, is it?" Theremin turned, looked, gasped. Gods! Apostles! 7 or 8 of them! Where had they come from? A private picnic in the field? Which he and Sephira had crawled right past, all unknowing? "Run for it," he barked to her. "You go this way. I'll go that." He began to sprint to his left, toward the towers that supported the highway. Maybe he could outrun them, disappear into the wooded country on the other side of the road. No. No. He was strong and fast, but they were stronger, faster. He saw them coming up alongside him. "Sephira," he yelled, "keep going. Keep going." Perhaps she had actually made it to safety. He couldn't see her now. The apostles were all around him. He reached for his needle gun, but one of them caught his arm immediately, and another got him by the throat. The gun was yanked from his hand. Legs poked between his, entangling him, tripping him. He fell heavily, rolled over, looked up. 5 hooded faces, unsmiling, rigid, looked back. One of the apostles had his own needle gun aimed at his chest. "Get up," the apostle said. "Slowly. With your hands in the air." Awkwardly, Theremin stumbled to his feet. "Who are you? What are you doing here?" the apostle demanded. "I live around here. My wife and I were just taking a shortcut through these fields back to our house." "The nearest farm is 5 miles away. A very long shortcut." The apostle gestured with a nod of his head toward the camp. "Come with us. Folliman will want to talk to you." Folliman. So he had survived the night of the eclipse after all, and was in charge of the expedition against M. Gondo. Theremin glanced around. No sign of Sephira at all. He hoped she was back on the highway by now, heading for M. Gondo as fast as she could go. A slim hope, but the only one left. The apostles marched him toward the camp. It was a weird sensation to be among so many hooded figures. Scarcely any of them paid attention to him, though, as his captors nudged him along into the largest of the tents. Folliman was seated at a bench near the back of the tent, looking through a sheaf of papers. He turned his chilly blue eyes on Theremin, and his thin, sharp face softened for an instant as a smile of surprise crossed it. "Theremin? You here? What are you doing, covering us for the Chronicle?" "I'm traveling south, Folliman, taking a little holiday since things are a little unsettled back in the city. Would you mind asking these thugs of yours to let go of me?"
"Release him,"
Folliman said.
"Where are you heading exactly, eh?"
"That's of no importance to you."
Let me be the judge of that. Going to Amgondo, are you, Theramin?
Theramin offered the cultist a cold, level stare. I don't see any reason why I should tell you anything.
After all that I told you when you interviewed me?
Very funny.
I want to know where you're heading, Theramin.
Stall, Theramin thought. Stall him as long as you can.
I decline to answer that question, or any other you might happen to have for me.
I'll discuss my intentions only with Mondior himself, he said in a steady, determined tone. Fullerman made no reply for a moment. Then he smiled again, a quick on-off. And then, suddenly, unexpectedly, he broke into actual laughter.
Theramin wondered if he had ever seen Fullerman laugh before.
Mondior, Fullerman said, his eyes glinting with amusement.
There is no Mondior, my friend.
There never was.